News, weather, truth, and fun. We're iHub Radio, homegrown in the Coachella Valley. For a fresh take on the news with Anita Rufus. You won't know if you don't listen.
And thank you so much for listening. Thank you for tuning in. This is Anita Rufus, the lovable liberal. You are listening to iHub Radio. I'm here live every Saturday from 10 to noon. And, you know, you may be listening right on our website, iHubRadio.com. And podcasts of the shows go up about 24 hours after I do them, so you can always go and find shows you may have missed. So I try and do this at the beginning of every show. It is April 25th. My God, April is almost over. I started sheltering at home earlier than a lot of people did, just because I reached the point where I made a decision not to drive into LA for the memorial service of a great friend, and not to go and audition for a game show. And I'm going into now my ninth week of staying at home. So that's like almost 2 months. And I sent out a blast this week, and one of the things I said in that blast was, look, let's be honest, some things are improving. The governor of New York was on air this morning saying their numbers have come down and they're in a pretty steady decline, although still way higher than anybody would like. So some things are improving. And I say it is a credit to the self-control that we are all trying to exercise. And it is despite the stable genius in the White House thinking out loud, which is always a problem. The way his mind works, watching his mind work. And let me just back up a second and say, I've done an awful lot of work and been very, very involved in a whole community around dementia. I'm one of the people who sponsors and is involved in the Dementia Friendly Cafe that we've been doing for, this is our sixth year in the desert area. And although we've suspended them now, we've been doing them monthly for, as I say, in our sixth year of doing it. And I've been around a lot of people who are going through this process of either caregiving someone they care about or being the person who is having to face the reality that they're heading down that path. And I am used to kind of watching the way people's minds work because it fascinates me. You know, right brain people who see everything visually and artistically, left brain people who are very logical and methodical, which unfortunately is me. I have almost no right brain. But watching the way the president's mind works is both fascinating and horrifying. And he does not know how to self-censor, which is what got him into a whole lot of trouble this past week. But nevertheless, we are where we are. Some things are improving. We are all trying to hold on to some degree of self-control. And I want to acknowledge that the majority of people in California do want to continue staying at home, staying separated as much as possible, wearing masks whenever they're outside, and waiting this out until it is truly a safer environment for us to get back to whatever normal may end up meaning. And we are all so thankful and acknowledging, in a sense, the selflessness of our healthcare workers. I found this incredible article, an opinion column by a cardiologist. His name is Sandeep Jauhar. And the question that is being asked is, what is the duty to treat people during a pandemic, particularly one where healthcare workers are getting infected and where they're still struggling to have enough personal protective equipment, those PPEs that everybody talks about, the gowns, the gloves, the proper masks. Some people are having to, well, I heard one nurse who was talking about the hospital that she was working in, that they were being given 2 gowns and 2 masks and being told to figure out how to make them last a week because there was a dearth of personal protective equipment in that hospital. And I just want to say all of the healthcare workers who have been especially on the front lines, and there's a whole lot of other essential people like fire and ambulance drivers and police, and but the doctors and nurses and aides that are out there deserve more than just our thanks. They deserve our admiration, they deserve our respect, and they deserve safety while they're doing what they're doing for us. And so this column that was written by this cardiologist really struck me. He said, medicine is a humanitarian profession. Healthcare workers have a duty to care for the sick. Now, side comment from me, just for what it's worth, I've known doctors who weren't that great at what they did. And I've been in hospitals where some of the people who clearly were probably minimum wage workers would kind of go about their duties without much connection or caring or communication with the patients. Excuse me. But this doctor is saying healthcare workers have a duty to care for the sick. And this is what struck me about his article. He said, medical societies have generally been supportive of this idealistic viewpoint. The ethics manual of the American College of Physicians has a statement that says the ethical imperative for physicians to provide care overrides the risk to the treating physician even during epidemics. The American Medical Association asserts that individual physicians have an obligation to provide urgent medical care during disasters, even in the face of greater than usual risks to physicians' own safety, health, or life. Do all physicians live up to that standard? Probably not. And we know that there are doctors who go into specialties where they might never have to deal with that kind of an epidemic emergency. But these are the ethical standards by which doctors and nurses are trained. This is the internalization of their responsibility, and it is why they deserve a lot more than our thanks. They deserve our admiration and our respect. I'm also struck by, you know, I watch some of the stories on the news where they talk to nurses or they talk to doctors or they talk to, I will never forget the story that sticks in my head about the woman who was a retired nurse whose mother was in a nursing home. And we know now that nursing homes are breeding grounds for this. And the number of deaths in nursing homes has absolutely kicked up the number that indicate hotspots around the country. But this woman was a retired nurse. Her mother was in a nursing home, and under the current guidelines, she could not go and visit her mother. So she volunteered to go back into nursing and volunteered to work as a nurse in that nursing home so that she could see and be around her own mother. And one of the things that made me feel good about everything that's going on right now excuse me, is the number of people who have been Googling, how can I help? In the last few months, at a higher number than any time since about 2004, Google searches for how can I help? People did that during the wildfires in Australia, during the immigrant family separations that were going on in 2018, during Hurricane Harvey in 2017, during the nuclear disaster at Fukushima in Japan in 2011, during the Haiti earthquake in 2010, Hurricane Katrina in 2005, and right now, more than any of those previous times, people have been Googling, how can I help? And there are lots of ways that have nothing to do with donating money. And this made me think about the reality that we've got a little protest of our own going on here in the Coachella Valley, because some areas here have said no golfing. They don't want people out on the golf course. They don't want people going to restaurants. They don't want people congregating. You know, it's okay to wear a mask and go and do your grocery shopping. And that is a very controlled environment. And they don't want people playing golf. Well, there's a whole lot of golfers, especially those who live here at country clubs behind gates where they feel incredibly safe. And golf is, for them, a form of relaxation. You're going to allow us to take a hike down the street so that we get some exercise, but you won't let us go out on the golf course. And I just keep thinking, with all due respect to people who work their whole lives to be able to retire in comfort and be able to do things like play golf to relax, maybe all by themselves, they're not around anyone else on the golf course. But is that really the best way you can help? Yes, it may be helping yourself. It may keep your own sense of sanity somewhere in a range that you feel like you can handle it. But unprecedented numbers of people, including in our own area, are lining up for food at food banks. People like me, who never did yet get the payout from the government that is supposed to have been deposited, and that our Secretary of the Treasury, Mnuchin, said, well, $1,200, that ought to last people for at least 6 or 8 weeks. I don't know what world he lives in. How can you help? I get that you want to be personally calm and relaxed in your own self, in your own life, in your own sense of security. But for God's sake, if what you want to do is go out there to make a difference for somebody else whose life is devastated right now because of what's going on. This just, all I know is, with anything I do, I just keep asking myself, why aren't I doing more? Because I don't think I'm doing enough. This is Anita Rufus, the Lovable Liberal, and you're listening to iHub Radio.
Live from Palm Springs, she calls it as she sees it. Local talk that's moving the needle. Here's Anita Rufus on iHub Radio.
And again, I thank you so much for joining me every Saturday from 10 to noon. I am here live. Brian's here running the board for me, and it's a chance to get out of the house anyway. Phone number here, if you want to get in on the conversation, is 760-544-8255. You can email a question or comment to studio@ihubradio.com, or you can text 760-699-0202. Now I've got the hiccups. My body is rebelling against me. So top of the news this morning, I want to share this with you because it's brand new on my news feed this morning. A newly released poll shows that 69% of registered voters, that's almost 7 out of 10 registered voters, 69% support Medicare for all. What? And 46% of Republicans support Medicare for all. What? As a result of this virus and the realization that although the cost of a test is covered, the cost of treatment is not. So anybody without insurance is getting a bill when they do manage to survive this and get out of the hospital. At the same time, I want to say that living in the state of California has turned out to be rather advantageous for those of us who are willing to just keep abiding by the rules. A lot of people don't like Governor Newsom. He's too liberal. Well, you know what? California has kept the curve relatively flattened out. Some beaches, not in LA or San Diego, which is densely populated areas, but some beaches as you go up the coast are reopening as long as people stay far apart from each other. And the governor has now announced that California taxpayers are going to pay restaurants to make meals for millions of seniors in California. And this is an initiative that could pump billions of dollars into what is a devastated industry in this state. We have about almost 6 million people in California who are 65 or older. And not sure how many of those will be eligible for this. There are certain poverty levels that have to. But if an individual makes less than $75,000 a year, they will be eligible. They also, however, must have either been exposed to the virus or have a high risk for exposure, like maybe they're working in an environment in a hospital or in some other place where it's very positive, like in a grocery store, or they have to have a compromised immune system. So anybody who is at risk will get up to $66 a day for three meals at local restaurants that meet certain criteria for which restaurants can participate. If 2 million people out of that almost 6 million in the state of California, if 2 million qualified under those requirements, they've either been exposed or they have a high risk for exposure or they have a compromised immune system, heart trouble, diabetes, obesity, and they make less than $75,000 or $155,000 for a family of four. If they qualify, if 2 million people signed up and get all three meals a day, the price tag would be about $4 billion a month for the taxpayers of California. But here's the kicker. The federal government will pay 75% of the cost. Local governments, not so much the state, but local governments will pay the rest. But the state government will cover three-fourths of the cost to the local government. So the beauty of this is it would allow restaurants to keep people who are currently employed or to start rehiring people, and it would allow us to have some sense of security that vulnerable seniors would be getting food. Because so many, especially those who are vulnerable, maybe they're in a nursing home. Maybe the nursing home can't afford to continue to support the same staff that they've always had, and therefore people are not getting what they need. This at least will ensure that as a state, we are caring about those people and trying to provide for them. And the reason that's so important to me right now is because California is actually leading the nation right now in how to try and control what is going on and give the most support possible to our citizens. The United States government, on the other hand, has absolutely abandoned its leadership role in the world, a role that we have been playing since World War II, holding out an example to the rest of the world. Two big weaknesses. We have an erratic president, and we have the absence of a robust public health care system and social safety net. Welcome to reality in the United States.
News, weather, and a couple of dozen loudmouths. This is iHub Radio. She calls it as she sees it. Now, here's Anita Rufus.
Okay, I want to talk about the virus for the rest of this hour just because it is the reality we are dealing with every day. However, in the next hour, I'm going to talk about other news that you may or may not have heard and some good news. There is good news. But let's start with this virus. Deaths in the United States from this virus doubled in the last week. And interestingly enough, some states that are beginning to try and reopen a little bit to bring some economic activity back to their locations, like Georgia. Georgia reopened with the highest day of deaths in that state. So not sure what the hell they're thinking about. In Georgia and South Carolina, Republican governors announced that they would ease some restrictions. And neither one of those states meets the White House guideline for the first stage of reopening, and they don't care. And since it was just a guideline, the president doesn't seem to care either, although, if you will notice, the president took a really strong stand against the governor of Georgia. One day on the telephone this past week, he told the governor, "Hey, even if you don't meet the guidelines, I trust your judgment. You do what you think is right." The very next day, somebody obviously had reminded him that that governor of Georgia didn't support the candidate who Trump wanted appointed to an open seat in Congress. And as a result, all of a sudden, the president came out and said he didn't agree with the governor. He thought the governor was rushing it. He thought the governor was opening Georgia too early. The day before, he had given him support. So talk about politicizing what's going on. Now, interestingly enough, in some of the states that are beginning to reopen, Georgia, Alaska, Oklahoma, in spite of that, some of the mayors of towns in those states are asking the residents of their town to stay home because local hospital operations in small cities and towns are at the point of almost being overwhelmed, even though the numbers may not sound as high as obviously places like New York or New Jersey or California or heavily populated states, Michigan, New Orleans. Mayors recognize trying to act in the interests of their own citizens. And many of them know that their towns are not ready for a reopening because if the disease continues to flourish and spread, they will run out of hospital beds and they won't be able to take care of their own people. In Colorado, a state that the president likes to tout because the numbers aren't that high there, of course, they don't have the same kind of population either, but a Walmart in Colorado just shut down. Freudian slip. They had so many deaths and positive tests as a result of the people working in that Walmart that they shut down the Walmart. because it not only posed a threat to the workers in that Walmart and their families, but also to the people who came there to shop. And a fact I had no idea about, but it is true, in Belgium, which is right at the center of Europe, Belgium has the highest death rate from the coronavirus per 100,000 people of anywhere else in the world, higher than Wuhan, China, or the United States. Now, we've heard in the news over time with regard to the virus that men die from the virus more often than women. In China, they found that men accounted for the majority of the cases that were coming up in their hospital system and 75% of the deaths in China. Italy, the man-to-woman ratio for death is 80% of the deaths in Italy were men, only 20% were women. And there could be a lot of reasons for that, including that maybe women take better care of themselves. They tend to be the caregivers in families. Maybe men don't take as good a care, or they drink more, or they're more obese. And that can have an impact on how well they're able to recover. But men are more likely to be tested positive and to die from the virus. In New York State, which is the epicenter of cases in our country, men made up nearly 60% of the deaths from this virus. Smoking, smoking may be a factor, since worldwide men tend to smoke more than women. Drinking, obesity, high blood pressure, respiratory issues, occupational hazards. Men tend to work in situations where they are more exposed to dangerous dust or particles or air. However, while men may be dying more, women are actually more at risk of getting the virus because one out of every three jobs held by women in the United States is designated as essential. So 30% of jobs held by women are considered essential. Nurses, cashiers in restaurants, home health aides for people who are stuck in their homes and need somebody to come and clean their house and cook for them and help to take care of them, help them shower and clean themselves up. And women who are not white, non-white women, are much more likely to have essential jobs than anyone else. So men may be dying more when they get it, but women are actually more at risk of getting it. Another thing we learned this week is that it turns out that the studies they've been doing of blood in areas where they are really testing, like the Bay Area of California, researchers are trying to discover the true extent of the spread of this illness. And it turns out, in doing what are called antibody studies to check whether or not people have had the disease and it has left an antibody in their body where their body was trying to fight off the virus, it turns out that a lot of people worldwide seem to have gotten the virus, had minimal symptoms, never sought treatment, and recovered. Which means that it has been much more widely circulated than we previously thought. Stanford researchers had gone through a Northern California county, Santa Clara County, and the actual number of cases, they thought they had only about 1,000 cases. But the Stanford researchers estimated the actual number was somewhere between 48,000 and 80,000. way beyond those 1,000 cases that they thought they had recorded. And this is because for a lot of people, they've been exposed, and for whatever reason, maybe they're healthy enough, maybe their own system had some way of fighting it off, they recovered from it without even seeking treatment and now have antibodies. However, this morning I heard a report that just because people have antibodies indicating that they had the virus and recovered doesn't mean they won't get it again. There are people who have antibodies who are in fact having symptoms of having gotten the virus again. And when we look at the number of people who have died, those numbers aren't accurate either. Because, first of all, the fact that somebody died with the virus doesn't mean it was the virus that killed them. They may have had a heart condition and just the stress on their body from having the virus caused a heart attack. On the other hand, in Alabama, officials said that one out of every 10 who died with the virus did not die of the virus. And yet again, on the other hand, we have a bunch of people who die who seem to die from natural causes. And we don't know that they actually had the virus. So the true number of those affected and those recovered is something that we really do not know. I will say that in Ecuador, the number of people reported to have the virus doubled overnight. That the global number of people who are counted as having the virus is approaching 3 million. It will hit that number this coming week. In the United States, the number of people who have the virus is rapidly approaching 1 million people. And over 50,000 have died. We are finally getting some news out of Russia. They do, in fact, have the virus, although you've heard practically nothing. But even Vladimir Putin said, we have a lot of problems and we don't have much to brag about. South America is struggling to stop this. Brazil has reported more than 25,000 cases, and researchers believe that number could be 10 times higher. In South Korea in particular, which has done incredible testing and has managed to keep their level really tight, some who recovered are once again testing positive. And officials in South Korea are trying to figure out why, for example, 163 people that they can identify who totally recovered from having had the virus have once again tested positive. Which means, since one of the criteria they're using here about who can return to work, well, if we can find out they have the antibody, it means they recovered from the virus and they are safe to go back to work. Wait a minute. Maybe they're not. All of these are factors that have to be taken into account. That's why we have doctors and researchers and scientists. And that's why, yes, there are economists who have to weigh in. Yes, there are political considerations. But if you're not going to listen to the doctors and scientists and at least try and get a consensus of what they think is really happening and the best way is to counteract what is happening, if you're not going to listen to them, then what the hell is the point? This is Anita Rufus, the lovable liberal. And this is iHub Radio.
Because you only think you know the truth. Striking blows against the corporate talk radio monolith in the Coachella Valley. iHub Radio. Participation encouraged, but not required. Here's Anita Rufus.
And participation is encouraged. 760-544-8255 or text 760-699-0202. So look, a lot of people are totally restless, want to get back out there, want to go back to work. A lot of people are really hurting because they can't go back to work yet. There are some places around the country experimenting with what reopening might mean. But for what it's worth, Americans in general do not agree with those who claim that the country is just ready to reopen. A majority of Americans, Republicans included, are rejecting this idea of these protests about why we need to reopen government. And those protests, as I told you last week, are not spontaneous and not just a bunch of people who are really seriously wanting to get back to work. They are organized and they are financed. Somebody has to supply those signs that people hold up that are obviously commercially made. Most Americans support the restrictions to combat the virus. A study was done this past week. 60% of the public opposes the protesters who are calling for governors to liberate their states by lifting these stay-at-home measures. Only 22% of Americans said they support these protesters. Even Republicans oppose the protests. 47% to 36%. And in fact, Americans are more likely to give high marks to their state governments rather than the White House, but that's not a big surprise. What is interesting is who is supporting and encouraging these protests. The protests are small in relative numbers. You know, if 50 or 75 people show up, it's something snazzy for the news media to show pictures of. But the truth is, these rallies are being organized. In one case, by a host of a show that runs on Alex Jones' InfoWar network. In Michigan, the DeVos family political organization has been supporting them. FreedomWorks, which is a very conservative organization of those who strongly support Trump, a group that pushes for smaller government and lower taxes, they're sending out guides to people who want to organize a protest in their own community. They say, write a simple message on a homemade sign like, "Let me feed my family," and bring pink slips with you or eviction notices. Invite healthcare workers. Invite religious leaders. One woman who went to the FreedomWorks site and got connected to someone who would give her the general rules for how to set up a protest. 2 days later, she held a rally in Oklahoma City and hundreds of people showed up in their cars. Now, what I want to know is if they truly want to present themselves as if they were just acting out of the frustration of the American people, that it wasn't political, why are they showing up with professionally made signs that support the president, and why are they showing up with Confederate flags? Give me a break. These are not just things that have been spontaneous because people are so upset with having to stay home and not being able to work. And by the way, people are frustrated with having to stay home and not be able to work. Of course they are. And there are those who are saying, well, there's something about this herd mentality. Well, if everybody gets it, Some people will be immune and they'll survive. And the people who die, well, hey, it's the cost of making sure that we can, as a society, survive the illness. And I keep saying, anybody who has that attitude, I want them at the front of the line. I want them to go first. There are areas of our lives that we forget about when we're in the midst of this kind of scary situation. Seven, so far, cases in Wisconsin have been linked to that in-person voting, everybody having to stand in a line. And as a result of some of that reality, two more states have canceled their elections and put them off. They were supposed to take place in May and June, and they are postponing them. The idea of reopening, you know, we have this whole thing about essential businesses and essential workers. What is an essential business? Is a tattoo parlor an essential business that can be open during this time? In Florida, World Wrestling Entertainment, the WWE, was considered essential. And the governor said, well, Americans are bored. People are starved for content. Body and Bath Works said, well, hey, we sell soaps and hand sanitizers. Ohio has something called the Dispute Resolution Commission that decided last week that pet groomers are not essential. Let me tell you something. If your standard poodle can't get its gorgeous haircut, you need to look at my hair right now. If I can work this out, you can manage to work this out. Liquor stores and medical marijuana dispensaries are generally deemed essential. And of course, gun stores. Meanwhile, where is oversight when you need it? A high-ranking Interior Department official is under fire for her role in securing access to billions of dollars of aid under some of the coronavirus allocations made by Congress. She got billions of dollars for a handful of wealthy Alaskan corporations, including the one that previously employed her as a lobbyist. Suppliers and middlemen are cashing in, and often state officials are paying more than 300% of list prices because of price gouging and companies that are getting help from the American taxpayers and then turning around and ripping them off. This is Anita Rufus, and you are listening to iHub Radio.